This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. New digital technology is helping companies keep track of how you spend your money, where you drive, what you read, what you eat. The revolution in electronic data collection has made it easier for the U.S. government to get information about terrorists. It's also given the government the potential to gather information on law-abiding citizens. My guest, Robert O'Hara Jr., is the author of the new book, No Place to Hide, Behind the Scenes of Our Emerging Surveillance Society. It describes the new data and surveillance technologies, the companies that are creating them, and how these companies are now working as private contractors on Homeland Security. He describes the relationship between these data management companies and the government as the security industrial complex. O'Hara is a reporter for The Washington Post and an associate of the Center for Investigative Reporting. I asked him to describe the origins of this relationship between data companies and the government.
After the attacks on 9/11, the government was anxious to prevent any future attacks. At the time, we didn't know if there was going to be follow-ups across the world or here in the States. And so they reached out to these information companies that had grown quite dramatically in the 1990s, and they said, can you help us? We need to find people. We need to find folks who were related to the terrorists on those planes, and we need to do it now. And that began the marriage that I write about.
Some of the information and technology that's being used for intelligence gathering was developed for commercial marketing. And one example is a system that was devised by the company Axiom. And this is a system called Telesource that developed through telemarketing. Can you tell us about the system and how it was used in is used in telemarketing?
Well, Axiom's one of the world's largest data managers. So they get information and maintain it for many or most of the major banks, retailers. They manage information for the credit bureau that we know as TransUnion. Many people probably have heard of that. It's one of the large three credit bureaus. And for years and years, they collected all sorts of information about regular folks, the value of your house, the kind of car you drive, the kind of job you have, your estimated income, the number of kids in your house. They can tell what kind of magazines you read and sometimes where you go on vacation or the books that you've bought over the phone or online. One of the things that Axiom became very good at with some of its partners was collecting not only regular listed phone numbers, but unlisted phone numbers. And they get those through a whole array of means. But one of them is just getting them directly from individuals through surveys and warranty cards and such. So they have one of the largest collections of listed and unlisted phone systems in the world so that they can resell this information. And that's what Telesource does. So I'll give you an example, Terry. You make a phone call to an 800 line and you want to order a sweater. If you're ordering from a company that works with Axiom, they can know, even before they answer your phone call, who's calling. And they can know information about you so that you fit into perhaps a profitable profile. You have such and such kind of car. You drive a Mercedes and all the rest. And so they can pitch this product to you in a way that's different than they would pitch it to me. And all of it happens instantaneously. And they use this sort of derived information, which they sometimes themselves call intelligence, to target people that are going to be most profitable.
Okay, and is this information being shared with intelligence agencies? And if so, how are the intelligence agencies using it?
Well, let's move away from Axiom because, of course, it's only just one of many of these companies. The industry in general shares much of the same information. And the way that they distinguish themselves in the marketplace is that they provide special services. So there are some companies like Seisint, which is short for seismic intelligence, that focus on law enforcement and fraud detection. And they'll have, say, 20 billion records, that's billion with a B, about every adult in the United States, or virtually every adult. And their service is to law enforcement, who says, I want to know about Terry Gross or Robert O'Hara, and they type your name in and maybe your phone number or the license plate number on your car, and up will pop a dossier that includes lots of these identifying details, or where you lived, the kinds of licenses you have, if you have a criminal record, former roommates, and all the rest. And so the answer to your question is that not just with Axiom, but with these other companies as well, they're providing this information as contractors in the war on terror to local, state, and federal law enforcement agency, as well as the intelligence community.
Are the information service corporations actually selling their data, their portfolios of information on us, to intelligence agencies, or are they just selling their systems that that collect and analyze data?
They're selling the information, and they're selling more of it than we can really imagine. And they're selling access to more of it than we can imagine. But they're not just selling the information. More and more, they're selling intelligence. One of the companies that I've looked at, named ChoicePoint, which is based in Atlanta, the Atlanta suburbs, in effect operates as a private intelligence service for the government. Now, what does that mean? It means that they're not just providing mailing lists or lists of people or even just the dossiers, but more and more they're providing the tools, these super smart computer tools, the software that looks at all the information and finds the patterns and the links among people in the way that an intelligence analyst would do, except it might take a single intelligence analyst 10 years to find the same information and the derived intelligence information that ChoicePoint can provide, or Cizant for that matter, or LexisNexis, in maybe 5 minutes.
It's hard to figure out whether this is reason to rejoice or to be scared. You know, the good part is that there's information that can help intelligence agencies track terrorists or catch terrorists. That's good news. On the other hand, there is a very big brother factor here.
Well, I think of it sort of this way. The first thought is there's absolutely no way to deny the potential utility of all this information. It makes the job of being a cop and an intelligence analyst and the national security official much easier because you have more information and more intelligence at your fingertips. Here's the problem, and it's a big problem. In America, we have a real tradition of wanting some space and some control over our own lives. This is nothing new. This is what they said in the Federalist Papers, and Thomas Jefferson was a big proponent, as everybody probably recalls. One of our Supreme Court justices 100 years ago referred to it as the right to be left alone or the right to be let alone. It's something that's very important to us. And what we're creating here is a system that enables both businesses and government officials to look into our lives in a way that simply was impossible a generation ago. And they're using it not just to sell us soap and widgets and such, but to decide if we pose a risk or if we ought to be talked to. And it becomes a very different thing when the government has access to this. Now, there's another layer. If this were all happening in the government, we might find that objectionable or not. But in any case, there are laws and rules that guide how the government uses information. The government can't create databases willy-nilly. It has to say what the reason is. It has to sort of publicize this at some level with, of course, restrictions on the intelligence world. Well, guess what? The private sector is doing for the government things the government can't do for itself. The government can't maintain records on 215 million people and use them as whenever it chooses. But it can go to these companies and say, we'd like your help. And that's what's happened since 9/11.
So the government can basically overstep civil liberties restrictions by just asking private corporations to do the work.
There are those who argue that the government, by outsourcing this work, is really sidestepping the spirit of rules that were put into place 30 years ago to limit what the government could do. I bet a lot of people will recall hearing about J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI's domestic surveillance. The Army had a surveillance unit, an intelligence work that was looking at regular people, in many cases moms and dads, religious people, certainly folks in the civil rights movement, who were doing things that were perfectly reasonable. And now we find, in fact, quite laudable. They were speaking their voice about women's rights, about civil rights. They were opposing the war. And they were doing it in a way that was perfectly legal. And yet the government was compiling files and, in some cases, actually using those files to undermine people personally. The laws that followed said, you can't do that. You have to limit how we use databases. You have to limit how you use computer systems. Well, those laws don't really apply in the same way to the private companies. And so here we have all this wonderful utility that could help protect us, and yet we're also stepping into a world where there are suddenly huge gaps between our values, the traditions that we have for autonomy and privacy, and these amazing uses of information and technology.
My guest is Washington Post reporter Robert O'Hara. His new book is called No Place to Hide. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Robert O'Hara, and he is a reporter for The Washington Post. And his new book is called No Place to Hide, and it's about the coming together of the government and intelligence agencies with private corporations that collect data. We talked a little bit about some of the companies that collect data on us, and in your book you make it clear that a lot of transactions that we do every day allow companies to be collecting data on us. The use of ATM cards, your Easy Pass, when you drive through a toll booth on the turnpike, it's collecting information on you. Can you run through some of those and what the implications are?
Yes, I sort of think of us now as like comets, leaving behind a long trail of data about our everyday lives. And this is really becoming the stuff of what I think of as a surveillance society. And it's all very mundane, but together it can be very telling. So that when you use your ATM card on the way to work, that says you were there and this is what you bought. When you drive through the Easy Pass, it records, in exchange for the convenience it's offering you, that you drove through there or that somebody driving your car drove through at a particular time and place. If you sign on at work to a particular website where you've sort of said, this is me, in order to get special conveniences and services or news, it records that. Over and over again in our lives, when we get prescription records, a lot of us have drug cards. Well, that information is being sent to a pharmacy benefit manager, which records when you were there, the kind of drug you bought. It measures it against other drugs that you've bought, and it knows what ailment you have, in effect. So let's see, some of the other lists. When you use your credit card, where you go out to dinner, when you make a phone call for a book, if you want to order over the telephone, if you order from a company like Amazon, all of this is being recorded. And it's very banal in many cases, and we certainly get lots of conveniences and benefits out of it. What we don't generally think of is how much information is being created about our lives. The people that are thinking of it, of course, are the commercial services that are finding ways to traffic in this detail, and the law enforcement folks, which are finding ways through the Patriot Act and other existing laws to sweep this up when they think it's appropriate.
Say you're a consumer who shops online, uses the Easy Pass, uses the money access card, credit card, and all of that, but you're not doing anything wrong. You're not a criminal. The police aren't looking for you. You're not a terrorist. I mean, might this collection of information hurt you in any way, or are you pretty safe if you're not a criminal or a terrorist?
I think the benefits we get from these marvelous and interesting advances is pretty clear. We like the conveniences. We love them. We're in many ways addicted to them and the discounts we get at using our shopper card and so on. The problem here is when you take a system that has exploded and become, in effect, the data revolution, and you put it into the hands not of marketers who are trying to pitch you a product, but into the hands of law enforcement and intelligence folks whose only mission is to stop terrorism, that becomes a problem. And here's why. The information is filled with mistakes, okay? And you can only derive so much information that's accurate, even when the information itself is accurate. There's limits, and yet they're really pushing on those limits. And that means that more and more people are going to be questioned. They're going to be, detained. We've seen, for example, that there are plenty of innocent people, liberals and conservatives alike, who are stopped at the airports now and put through the ringer. And it's a scary thing to be stopped and questioned, in some cases taken to a back room, and treated as though you may be a terrorist. That's going to happen more and more. And it's going to be because of mistakes, and it's going to be because of mistaken uses of all this information.
Let's talk a little bit about biometrics. And this is digital information that identifies our fingerprints and can match it with other fingerprints. It identifies our eyes through imaging of the iris. What else does biometrics do?
Well, biometrics are the immutable characteristics in somebody's body. So, yes, the eyes are one, fingerprint, voice is a biometric that's being used more and more. There's a company on Long Island that sells voice biometric analysis tools to everybody from call centers that you call to order goods to, believe it or not, the IRS. And they think of it as a customer service tool, so it can recognize who you are instantly, and they can go back and review these recordings in a way, once again, they couldn't not too long ago. Biometrics are fascinating because they're fast becoming a part of our lives. And that's interesting because, again, when we were children, Terry, the idea of a fingerprint was something that you saw in a movie about the FBI or on the most, you know, those 10 most wanted posters that you saw at the post office. There were a lot of people who would never, ever think of giving a fingerprint because of what it implied. Now, we're quickly getting to the point where we're going to have to share our fingerprints to get a passport. A lot of people use fingerprints to get into their offices. Some of these companies we're talking about are starting to create special services to collect and maintain fingerprints. It's really spreading, and biometrics are going to be the thing that we have to share to prove who we claim to be.
What's the best framework you've come up with or that you've heard for figuring through how much information is worth giving up about ourselves with all the implications of possible violations of civil liberties sometime down the line? How much of that is worth, you know, giving to the authorities in return for more security from terrorism?
Well, if I may correct you gently, it's not down the line. The mistakes and the violations occurring now. The FBI arrested somebody in Oregon, a lawyer who had become Muslim, because of a mistake over a fingerprint. People are being stopped and detained at airports, mistakenly left and right, and it's not a casual thing. I've talked to people who are shaken by these detentions. So it's not a future thing. I can see the problem becoming greater in the future. Secondly, not to be coy, I'm not going to recommend a framework, but I can say something I think with absolute certainty, which is we have got to understand the scope of the data revolution that's taken place and taking place in the private sector. And we've got to have clearer reports from the CIA, the FBI, and the other branches of the governments on how they're using this data revolution as a starting point. And that's going to take a long time because it's all happened so fast. The companies and the government have not been as forthcoming as I'd like to see, and for different reasons. So before we can really come up with a framework, we've got to have a clear understanding of just what's happening here. And it's the rare person that does.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Robert O'Harrow is the author of the new book, No Place to Hide. He's a reporter for The Washington Post and an associate of the Center for Investigative Reporting. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.